Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from Real Ghost Stories Online, inviting you to subscribe to our other podcast called The Grave Talks. It's where I sit down and interview individuals who've had extreme paranormal situations happen to them in their lives. Just search The Grave Talks on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Be sure to press subscribe and give us some stars to help spread the word that this show exists. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, the ghost of Rhoda Derry. Rhoda Derry was a victim of our society's once cruel and bizarre system of treatment of the mentally ill. Her life was also an example of how one can find peace and overcome such disturbing treatment when matched with the right care. Does the spirit of Rhoda Derry still haunt the last location she called home? Did the horrendous abuse suffered by Rhoda Derry leave a permanent imprint on the world that we live in today? Some still claim to see the ghost of Rhoda Derry on the grounds of the Peoria State Hospital. Is the ghost of Rhoda Derry finally at peace? We discuss the tragic story today with Sylvia Schultz.
In order to talk about Rhoda Derry, we really also do need to talk about the Peoria State Hospital and Dr. George Zeller. Now, when you say haunted mental asylum, your mind automatically goes all American Horror Story on you, mm-hmm. and you automatically assume that there was pain and fear and abuse. And it is my privilege and my great joy to tell people this was not the case at the Peoria State Hospital. This was a place where patients were treated like family. Dr. Zeller always used to tell people about this fine old word, asylum. This is a place where people can come to get help. And if somebody is beyond help, this was a place for them to live and be cared for as long as they needed to be. So Dr. Zeller felt very strongly about not having any sort of restraints at all. And this becomes important in Rhoda's story, too. Mm-hmm. Dr. Zeller believed that patients would come to the asylum from other poorhouses and from other hospitals, and they would come in straitjackets. And Dr. Zeller would have his staff confiscate any straitjackets, handcuffs, foot cuffs that the patients arrived in. And Dr. Zeller would keep all of these items, and he kept them in a room next to his office. And the only reason he kept any of them was for his staff to point to and say, never again, not here, not at this asylum. He felt very strongly about that. When Dr. Zeller became superintendent of the Peoria State Hospital in 1902, before he took the job, he was actually a surgeon in the Army. He was serving in the Philippines in the Spanish-American War. So the asylum was built without him there. And it was furnished with all of the things that an asylum of that time, the very early 20th century, would have had, which meant that there were bars on the windows, which meant that they had a couple of Utica cribs, which meant that they had straitjackets and foot cuffs and handcuffs and all those horrible things. Dr. George Zeller came onto the scene in 1902, and he got rid of all of these things, with one exception, which I'll tell you about. First of all, he took all of the bars off of the windows. He insisted that the staff in the cottages leave the windows open about an inch and a half so that the patients could see that they weren't locked in. He said, these people don't lock their doors at home. Why on earth would we lock them in here when they've come to us for help? Mm-hmm. So this is a state hospital.
Yeah.
And Dr. Zeller had to had to make an accounting of everything he did to the board and to the state. And that was the first thing the board said was, okay, you've just taken $6,000 worth of bars off of the windows. What are you planning on doing with that? Well, what Dr. Zeller did was he made a zoo on the grounds. And those bars from the windows were repurposed into cages for the animals. There were deer, there were squirrels. The squirrels that you see in Bartonville now are the descendants of the squirrels that were in the petting zoo that this asylum had. There was a black bear that was so tame that the patients would take it around to the cottages, and this black bear would take a bath in pools on command. And it was the patients caring for these animals, for the petting zoo, basically, on the grounds. I mentioned Utica cribs. This will be very important in Rhoda's story as well. The asylum did have a couple of Utica cribs when we first started out, and Dr. Zeller turned those Utica cribs into mangers. He filled them with hay for the deer to eat out of. The only reason we have any Utica cribs surviving from those very early days is that Dr. Zeller kept one, and he would fill it with the straitjackets that he had confiscated and the handcuffs and the leather mitts that they would put on people. And he would take this Utica crib around to state fairs, and he would display it, and he would tell people, this is what your loved one will not be subjected to if they need to come to us for help, for treatment. So he used that as an object lesson, which was really kind of neat. So we do actually have, in the Peoria State Hospital Museum, we have the only remaining Utica crib from the Peoria State Hospital's very early days, and that's the only reason it survived, is because it wasn't used as a rabbit hutch or a deer manger.
Sure, and it's really quite amazing that in this story that we're about to hear of the Peoria State Hospital, in so many other cases when a state hospital is brought up, it's typically not a good place. It's typically not a great final place for many people. But in this case, in the case of Rhoda Derry, it was a saving grace. It was a place that really rescued her out of another location, the Adams County Poor Farm, which is where really her the dark side of her story begins.
It begins before.
Yeah, it truly. I was just correcting myself there. It really truly begins slightly before that with the relationship that she was in. Why don't we take a step back to that, into that relationship, and walk us into how did Rhoda end up at the Adams County Poor Farm? What happened there?
Oh, it was a long, tortuous journey for her, the poor dear. So now that we've looked at the Peoria State Hospital, we can talk about Rhoda's story. Rhoda was born in 1834. She was actually born in Indiana, and her family moved to Adams County in Illinois, which is downstate. It's down by Quincy. So she was the youngest of nine children. Beautiful, beautiful young girl. Dark hair, flashing eyes. She was really, really a pretty girl. She was maybe a little bit spoiled. We don't know. Being the youngest of nine children, she certainly knew what she wanted. And when she was 16 years old, she did the most natural thing in the world. She fell in love. Rhoda's family lived in Adams County, and there was a neighboring farm family called the Phoenixes, and Charles Phoenix was also 16 years old, and Rhoda caught his eye, and they started courting. We don't know exactly how far their relationship went, but we do know that after they had been courting for a couple of years, Charles asked Rhoda to marry him, and she said yes. Most natural thing in the world. Mm-hmm. However, there was one person who really was not very happy about this relationship between Rhoda and Charles. That was Nancy Phoenix, Charles's mother. Now, as I said, Rhoda was the youngest of nine children. The Derrys were dirt poor. They were very, very poor. They were not very well off at all. In all the census records that mention the Derry family, they are shown as being tenant farmers on other farmers' land. They didn't even have land to call their own. The Phoenixes, on the other hand, were rather well off. And Charles was the oldest son of only four children. So he stood to inherit his father's land after Frederick passed away. So Nancy Phoenix was not about to have her baby boy Charles marry one of these dirt poor Derrys. She was not having that. She was so insistent on this, on destroying this relationship, that she confronted Rhoda in the street one day. And she said, "If you do not release my son from this engagement, I will curse you." Now, talking about witchcraft in front of Rhoda Derry was a really good way to get her attention very quickly, because this part of Rhoda's story starts even before she's born. Rhoda's grandmother, Moll Derry, was known as the fortune teller of the Revolution. Moll and her husband Valentine grew up in Germany, and around the time of the Revolutionary War in the colonies, Valentine was conscripted by the British to fight in the Revolutionary War on the British side. Well, Moll was not about to be left behind, so she disguised herself as a man and emigrated with Valentine. And once she got here, she fought at Valentine's side, still dressed as a man. They switched sides, fought for the revolution. When the Revolutionary War was over, Moll and Valentine settled in Pennsylvania, and Moll became a very powerful practitioner of Pennsylvania Dutch hex magic. She was known for counties around as being able to lift and cast curses. So, talking about witchcraft in front of Moll Derry's granddaughter, Rhoda, really was a good way to get her attention. Unfortunately, Rhoda took Nancy's threat seriously. A couple weeks after this confrontation with Nancy Phoenix, Rhoda started acting very, very strangely. She had some sort of break with consensual reality. She came home and swore that the devil was after her. She said she was being attacked by Old Scratch, an old-fashioned name for the devil. She would do things like, the family lore says that she would spin around on her head on the bed, like a top. I don't know if that refers to some sort of fit, if that's the best way to describe it. But she started having very serious problems. She went downhill very quickly. Her parents decided to have her committed to the state hospital in Jacksonville, Illinois. Now, the real tragedy about, one of many tragedies about Rhoda's life, is that the state hospital in Jacksonville had been set up just a couple years before Rhoda was committed there. It was not designed for long-term care. Patients were allowed to stay for 2 years. If they didn't get better in 2 years, you had to give your place in the hospital up to somebody who might actually be able to be helped. The treatment at the state hospital was very simple. It was a lot of talk therapy. And whatever was wrong with Rhoda probably would have been able to be helped quite a lot with talk therapy. But talk therapy only works if you start it right away, within the first 6 months. And it was a couple of years before Rhoda's parents decided to put her in the state hospital. So that chance was gone. That chance to help her was gone.
I hope you enjoyed your 15-minute preview of our new podcast, The Grave Talks. Be sure to subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download podcasts to not miss any episode of the show. New episodes every single Monday. Just search for The Grave Talks and then press subscribe. Give us a review while you're at it and some stars that will help us grow in the rankings and let other folks know that the show exists to make an even better show for you. The Grave Talks. Check it out at thegravetalks.com.